Oh, yeah. I got to do the sponsor message. Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Ty? That's right. If you go to GoFundMe.com/Nerd and Ty, you can contribute to our legal fund, or you can directly sponsor an episode, and we'd read your name aloud right here and say nice things about you. Unless you're Archimize, then we'd just make fun of you, but still mention your name. Just again, go to nerdandtie.com, click on sponsorship information, or go to GoFundMe.com/nerdandtie.
On this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie Live
at NoBrandCon,
we are gonna talk about the Last Jedi trailer. Mystery Science Theater 3000 is back. Monica Vandelli and Ted Williams and Traw from Odyssey Con at the Rocky Mountain Fur Con goes kaboom. All that and your mailbag on this stuffed edition of Nerd and Ty. Look at that huge crowd we have here at NoBrandCon.
Oh, it's so big. This room is packed completely.
All 5,000 of you, don't turn around. Just trust us that they're here.
Having trouble coping with it all. It is such a pleasure to be here in the Wisconsin Dells at Nerd and Tie, or excuse me, at NoBrandCon 2017.
At Nerd and Tie Live at NoBrandCon.
Yeah, sure.
There you go.
We'll go
with
that.
You could have covered it that way, but no.
I am one of your hosts, the unstoppable Ty clashing with my outfit for once, Nick Izumi. Successfully having gotten our audio set up with limited time frame, right next to me, immediately to my right, is the indomitable Trey Dorn.
I'm wearing pants, but you'll have to trust me because I'm sitting behind a table.
I'm legitimately not wearing pants this time.
This is true.
This is so true, yeah.
And confirming the trueness, we got them. The one, the only, Genprock.
Official pants inspector for Nerd and Tag.
Official pants inspector. It is now official. Wow, we have our
OPI.
Show is just packed to the gills.
Here.
Ooh, Sophie.
Lean in. This is the worst title card ever.
Our show is just packed to the gills, and we only have
That's
an hour to get through all of our so great materials. So unfortunately, we can't go through as much as we'd love to. Like, ask you, hey, what's your favorite cosplay, and how are you enjoying NoBrandCon? I'm sure you're all loving it. We should really get rolling with what we got on
right.
the docket.
If we have time to like bug you about stuff, we will. But since they're gonna kick us out of here at the end of the hour, we can't. If we'd rather talk about the stories first and then do the fun stuff if we've got, like, at the end.
So let's
I made a hand gesture. This is an audio-only episode.
Audio.
We're not doing video.
You pulled a me.
This is radio.
Why don't we move forward into the actual story? So probably the biggest piece of news from these last couple weeks, after waiting with bated breath, it's finally happening. We got our first trailer for Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi.
Woo!
Yeah.
I can make them clap if I say woo. That's what I have learned.
The power.
Yes.
Oh, what great responsibility you're not going to use. So, this is a pretty cool trailer. Some stuff blowing up, some scenic shots, Rey making rocks move, and Luke Skywalker saying that it's time for the Jedi to end. What do you guys make of Star Wars?
It makes perfect sense, because every time they try to bring the Jedi back or do something, they fuck it all up. Okay, we're getting the explicit warning on this episode. All right, no more swears from me. That's
we're not even 4 minutes in.
I mean,
it's a record.
So like if you look at like, especially, and the prequels really established it. Like in the original, trilogy, the Jedi look all wise and great, but you know, it's because they're not, you know, into murdering kids.
Yeah.
Which, you know, to be fair, if the standard for like perfect is doesn't murder kids, pretty much all of us meet that. unless you don't, and then I'm scared. So, like, the
funny
the,
story.
there's always a like, because there's a line that we go back to in the prequels, which is only a Sith deals in absolutes, which is in itself an absolute statement. So the Jedi, like, the whole thing is that the Jedi are just as, like, cut off. Well, it's not necessarily a light side, dark side thing, because being a Jedi isn't just the light side. It is a whole set of structures and rules and things that really, if they, like, if you look at the way that, like, Anakin Skywalker was brought into the Jedi Order, it actually makes sense that it was so easy for him to fall, where if someone who understood nuance had been training him, like the late Qui-Gon Jinn, instead of Obi-Wan.
Oh, yeah, because things would have been so much better with the guy who kept telling them to split up at the dumbest possible times.
He had a particular set of skills. Those skills were splitting up and getting killed.
That dude, other people have said it before, but his name is Qui-Gon Jinn because there's no way he wasn't drunk all the time with everything he was coming up with.
Oh. But, he was just so taken with his role.
But, you know, I'm just gonna...
You can't see it, but I'm giving her a dirty look right
now.
Oh,
and I've got a biggest grin on my face. It's so good.
Oh, it's all about love, actually, but that's not the point.
I love that film.
That was a deep cut. But the point is, and the guy who played his kid was in that movie.
Stop
in Love,
getting
actually,
sidetracked.
Was in The Force Awakens, though, as a member of the First Order, which is the Jedi's fault, somehow. But I guess the point is that, like, and Luke tried to establish a new Jedi Order in the new canon, and did it much more poorly than he did in the expanded universe, and screwed up, and that's, like, he blames himself for Kylo Ren. So of course he wants, like, and that's what I'm taking away, is that the idea is that the Jedi were stagnant and effectively, like, extremists, and so you need a new way to prevent bad things from happening. I'm not really articulate right now.
I had a kind of different takeaway from it that I freely admit I am stealing from someone who's actually in the room right now. My friend Miles pointed this one out, of something more along the lines of you have a character of what happens after the Chosen One narrative when the Chosen One succeeds and everything still goes down the crapper anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That is such an interesting idea of someone who's Luke, and I'm really excited to see how they play with that.
Right. I'm just thinking that Luke's been sitting alone on an island for a long time, so maybe he's thought about this for a few minutes. Because what else is he going to do? Count rocks?
Yes.
Make piles of rocks?
Yeah.
Build a girlfriend out of rocks? It's a lonely island. Look, let me throw it this way. He saw the Millennium Falcon coming, and he posed to turn around and take his hood off. There's no way he didn't see the ship coming.
Well, it was a couple of hours.
So, like, Luke Skywalker is a drama queen, but I guess my point is that, like, my thought is that it's time for the Jedi to end in the next sentence. It's time for something new.
Yeah.
But beyond that Luke Skywalker line, we really learn nothing about this movie other than some crap blows up. Poe and Finn are definitely in it. Rey's got some force powers we already knew she had.
Kylo Ren looks kind of emo. Oh, Finn hasn't woken up yet.
Well, to be fair, Jin. Wow, Rey just got there. Qui-Gon Jinn's been dead, and the other Jin's
And the other
been...
Jin is super dead. Sorry, that's spoilers.
If your name is Jin, you're not going to make it in the Star Wars universe. That is the lesson.
Yeah.
But. There are lots of dead people in Star Wars Archimedes. You don't have to name all of them. I mean, you can on your own time. That sounds like a great panel for you to do. People Who Die in Star Wars, starring Archimedes. Archimedes sits there up front and just lists them.
I just want to know.
Red 3, red 4. Red 5. Actually, I don't remember which Luke's call sign was, so I probably...
Luke's was Red 5.
Yeah, well...
Good job.
Well, guess what?
Good
He's
job.
Been dead on the island the whole time.
Well, okay, so I've got a...
Wait. But Red 3 died in Rogue One.
Red 5 died in Rogue One. Can't even count.
Yellow leader?
What this did point out to me, though, there is one other thing we learned from the trailer, and I need to point it out, is that Poe Dameron cannot keep his X-Wing intact to save his
life.
Yeah, that was
kick-ass black one, like,
yeah,
with a custom paint job. Like, he went and got that thing detailed, and it's just gone.
Put a turbo in it.
Yeah, Black Beauty's gone. His awesome blue one.
Yeah, his blue
gone.
One.
Yeah, dude can't keep... I would not trust this guy with an X-Wing.
You know, I'm gonna tell you why. Because how else are they going to sell you a third Poe Dameron X-Wing?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to work, to be fair. Poe Dameron X-Wings are turning into Char-Zakus for me. I just need all of them.
The next one's going to be red with kick-ass flames and a painting of a dragon on the front.
Okay, I don't need it anymore.
They're going to put a nitro in it, yeah.
But, I mean, besides that, like, here's a bunch of flashes to tease you, but I will tell you that, like, they have managed to turn Rey's, her theme into a trigger that will make me instantly start crying.
Oh, dear.
It is like, if I think about the song too much, I start crying.
Wow.
John Williams is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's made me feel nostalgic for something that took place 2 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Good golly.
Well, think about it. Like, we all love everything that John Williams has done in the Star Trek franchise.
The Star Wars franchise?
Okay. I have been awake since 7:30 in the morning.
No.
I have had two...
I need, like, a squirt bottle up
I've been awake since 7:30. I've only had two meals. Wow. Same story, Trey.
What happens
Yet
is...
Yet I know which one has R2-D2 in it and which one has Data. Thank you very much.
There's a thing that happens, and you'll see this happens way more on convention episodes where I do word replacement. It is a thing I do where I will start say... Like, I've done it twice this episode. The Red 5 thing was just me not caring what Luke's call sign was. I do word replacement. It's a thing, man. I apologize. My mother's worse.
Well.
But anyway, Star Wars.
Is there much else to say about... I mean, it was a teasery trailer.
It's good.
We managed to talk like 10 minutes about a trailer with zero content.
Yeah.
So
I'd say we're good.
Let's
move forward.
So speaking of things that talk a lot with very little content.
I had it.
Nostalgia.
Returns. Like Return of Fun Space Universes. sorry, I'm very proud of that. Also words. MST3K is back!
Yeah!
Long-awaited, all three of us are Kickstarter helpers.
Backers.
Backers, that's the word. And it is awesome and amazing, and we're all very excited, and
it
was worth the wait.
Yeah.
It turned out to be the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm going to be honest, it was one of those things that I backed, I excitedly backed it, but I went in kind of wary.
Yeah,
understandably. When someone digs out your old favorite TV show after almost two decades, you get a little nervous.
Yeah, I was very wary about, like, the new voices for everybody, because, like...
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
when you get used to...
Baron Vaughn is the one it takes the most. So it's like... obviously every part in MST3K has been replaced at one time before, but Kevin Murphy took over Servo in season 2 of the Comedy Central run, technically Comedy Channel run for the first season, but they're the same network, when they merged with Ha, which was a stupid name for a cable network, because it was Ha. Kevin Murphy took over season 2, and he was the voice for 9 years of that show.
Yeah.
And so for 9 seasons, he was our Tom Servo. And because Comedy Central never reran the first season episodes, as far as I can tell, because the sets looked so different and the voices were different, they just frankly only reran episodes from season two and later. A lot of fans didn't hear Josh Weinstein's voice until much later DVD releases, mm-hmm. And with the exception of people who had seen the tapes of but most MST3K fans had not seen the first season. Probably, I think the
episodes, people were not circulating the tapes, is what we're saying.
From the first season didn't end up on any streaming services or I think any DVD releases until 2000 and I want to say 8 or 9. So. You know, it's so, but so Kevin Murphy's so great, but Baron Vaughn's voice took a little bit of time to get used to, but he's a very good Servo.
Yeah.
Once you get used to him,
it's fine.
It's great.
It's, Hampton Yount was easy to get used to because his voice literally feels like it's halfway between Trace Billow's and Bill Corbett's voice.
Uh-huh.
For the character. And obviously because Jonah is playing, Jonah Ray's playing a different character than either Joel or Mike, it's easy to accept his voice is different because he's Jonah and not Joel or Mike.
Yeah.
I like Jonah, and I like his love of laser-etched wood cutouts. I think that's a weird character trait, and I like it.
So how far have you gotten into the series?
I'm 3 episodes in.
Okay, how about you?
2 episodes.
I've watched all but the last 4. I think I'm the last episode, which was Many Loves of Hercules, which I won't spoil it for you. I won't tell you what it is, but it is my favorite end skit on an MST3K episode ever. I think Cry Wilderness is a stronger episode as a whole this season, but
Cry Wilderness is a work of art.
Yes.
It is a cry. If there's anything to cry about, it's a shame that it doesn't have bigger cult movie status.
Yeah.
How
have none of us heard of Cry Wilderness
exactly.
before that episode?
How has no one heard of Cry Wilderness until this last week? It's an insanely funny movie.
Yeah.
Well, and it goes to show that, the producers are doing, a really good job at, picking films.
Oh, right. Yeah. I cannot think of a better first episode than Reptilicus.
Right?
I never would have guessed Denmark made a Godzilla knockoff. And
so I want to say, so the one thing that took me a little bit to get used to was the timing of the opening of the episodes, and it took me a while to figure out what it was.
Mm.
And it's entirely has to do with my expectations. There's the same number of minutes in an episode of skits and host sequences as there were in the old episodes, but they're split differently because the original shows did not have a cold open. You'd begin with the theme. Then a short sketch, commercial, then the second sketch, and then Joel, yours is always the invention exchange. The new show starts out with a cold open scene, then Jonah gets sucked into the theme song.
And
once I started to expect that, it was better.
I think it's an anti-Netflix measure. Because you have to understand, Netflix, for so many shows, has this setting where it skips the opening.
Yeah.
And that is unacceptable in Mystery Science Theater.
And
it
won't skip it on that shows that have cold open.
Yeah. Cold, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's
I
good.
Also
that's
appreciate that they do kind of little pretend commercial buffers.
Oh, yo, those are great.
Just to make it feel like you're still watching an actual TV show instead of just binging on Netflix.
And it's Moon 13, the moon.
Yeah.
But it's always it's a nice little break because that's the whole thing. It's when you watch the old episodes, even on DVD or on streaming, they have those bumpers still in there. And it kind of the episode is 90 minutes long. So it gives you a nice little moment to take a breath. With mm-hmm. and usually makes a joke either about the film or some behind the scenes thing, and it's I've really enjoyed that, and I want to say what I was talking about with the opening sketch, I want to say that on repeat viewings it didn't bother me. I've rewatched the first 4 episodes I watched a second time when I was writing my review of the new season, and the things that bothered me the first time I watched Reptilicus did not bother me the second time, so mm-hmm. I know that the problem was my expectation. And not the episode. So it's...
Can I also just point out just how on point so much of it is. Because, like, the riffing is obviously stellar.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. even the host segments, I love Jonah's Monster Rap. Like, that's
oh my
one
God.
Of my favorite.
Well, it's written by Paul and Storm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's... And
it's one of my favorite things ever.
He said in the screening for Backers Q&A that they did on VHX and YouTube, Jonah Ray went around for like weeks. Just he would start conversations by walking up to people in the cast and just launching into the rap because he was so
That's
nervous
awesome.
About getting it wrong. That he just constantly went around saying it.
That's so good.
That's awesome. I love that. You know, I only have one really big issue with the show, and it's the dumbest issue ever.
Mm.
Jonah looks exactly like my friend Vanessa's husband.
It's
so frustrating.
Oh, he does.
So, like, every time I see him
it for me now.
I need to finish my Tom
Servo
puppet.
I'm not good enough friends with Vanessa to know what he looks like. I'm fine.
When I finish my Tom Servo puppet, I'm just going to follow him around from now on.
Yeah.
Saying, Jonah. Jonah. I'm not Jonah. Jonah.
This sounds like an excellent plan.
Yeah.
Doing it.
All right, we should move on to like the actual serious meat of the episode then.
All right,
the crunchy stuff.
Oh. Ooh.
Convention news.
Woo, boy.
Hard-hitting research into things that only the people in this room care about. Actually, yeah. They're both really serious stories. I don't know why I'm making jokes.
Yeah, first up Hibiski Odyssey Con. Odyssey Con Madison
it's happening next week.
In theory. it is a sci-fi and lit con that's been in Madison, Wisconsin for several years.
Since
2001, wow.
They're 1 year older than No Brand Con.
But they're going to be that they've been known in a little, but they've gotten into a little bit of trouble when one of their guests of honor, Monica Valentinelli, announced that she is a tabletop game developer and also an author, announced that she was not going to be coming to the con because they have a known harasser on the event staff. Obviously this created some, waves, got some people, talking, which led to another
complete chaos.
Where to even go with this?
So
author Tad Williams, shortly thereafter, also withdrew from appearing because of the same reasoning.
Yeah, so they pretty much lost their two biggest guests this year.
Odyssey Con's reactions were all over the place and everything not to do in this situation, to put it politely.
They went cray-cray.
this ranged from responding publicly by posting private emails between the con and the authors.
Let's dig into this. So
yeah,
what the real issue here actually is, you got to go back to another Wisconsin science fiction convention, WisCon, a few years back. Jim Frankel was at that time he was kicked out of WisCon. And for harassment, he was also let go from his position at Tor Books. And Jim Frankel's really the problem. This is the person they have a problem with, regardless of anything. And so Jim Frankel was listed as guest liaison on Odyssey Con staff. Again, this is a person who was booted from WisCon for harassment. And if you're saying, how could the OdysseyCon people have known that this person was booted for harassment? Well, that's That goes over to Richard S. Russell. Richard S. Russell was on the board of directors for WISCON when this happened and was summarily, was effectively kicked off the board of directors for WISCON for defending Jim Frankel is one of the main reasons. So, and Richard S. Russell is also on the CONCOM of OdysseyCon. So they were well aware of the controversy surrounding this person. And Monica Valentinelli had been under the impression that Jim Frankel was no longer on OdysseyCon's CONCOM until she found out she was being put on a panel with him.
Awesome sauce.
And that's where this goes back to. So the let's talk about the reaction that they did.
Yeah, because that's where things started falling apart.
So one of the co-chairs of Janet Lewis, who's one of the co-chairs of OdysseyCon, after the statement, posted a string of private emails about the exchange. Because we'll link to our article in the show notes for this episode, so you can read Monica Valentinelli's statement and some of the stuff yourself. She posted a private email exchange along with a public statement written by Richard S. Russell. So the co-chair posted a statement, an official statement to the Facebook group, the official Facebook group for OdysseyCon. Pretty much defending Jim Frankel a little bit, saying, you know, that no claims of harassment were ever made against him at their con. But they said he was voluntarily stepping down. But then they later deleted that statement entirely because pretty much maybe you shouldn't defend the guy who got fired from Tor. And posted a second official statement saying that, officially detailing that Frankel wasn't with the conventions and that... But they again reiterated that they didn't know about his past. That he didn't have a past problem with OdysseyCon. But the fact is that they were there. Dude was there. So it was after all of that that Tad Williams then withdrew. There have been also some other panelists who weren't guests of honor who withdrew, who we haven't bothered going through, and it is a rabbit hole of weird.
And a whole lot of sponsors have pulled out too. So
yeah, so that's next weekend in Madison, folks.
Maybe.
Well, it'll probably happen this year.
I think.
Hey, Langland, I feel like running to the back and closing the door so I don't hear Aerosmith. Karaoke starting up in here after we're done. So, no.
You're
right.
Karaoke.
They can't hear you, Archimedes. We don't have a mic pointed towards the audience this show. All right. Anywho, so yeah, no, it's, again, you have thoughts on WISCON? Not WADCON, OdCon. Don't want to blame WISCON. WISCON people are the ones who did the right thing.
Nah, it just sounds like an odd con.
Hey-o! Yeah. You are correct, sir. Ed McMahon impersonations are wasted on this generation. It's...
You know, the shout out to the one guy who got it. You sure did.
Oh, God. So, yeah, no, this is messed up, yo. I think that is... I think that OdysseyCon... OdysseyCon is... So, if you look at the history of conventions in this state, a lot of the old sci-fi cons from the 90s went away and evaporated into the ether. OdysseyCon came out of that older culture. They ran their first con in 2001, but they ran it like an older con. They're very separate. For those who don't really know, because we've got listeners all over the country who don't know the history of Wisconsin cons, or at least have an inkling of it, like some of the people in this room do, as we're in Wisconsin. It's the science fiction conventions in this area do not really talk that much with the anime conventions. There's a generational gap between them significantly. And even a lot of the general geek conventions, if you take something like GeekCon, it still more associates itself. It's really interesting because GeekCon is kind of a... much more associated with the anime conventions, even though thematically you'd think it would have more in common with OdysseyCon based on the subject matter. I mean, Onsticon does promote themselves there, and obviously there's some cross membership between attendees, but it is OdysseyCon.
From what I understand, there was quite a bit of GeekCon pullout in this last week. So
Yeah, GeekCon had been doing stuff, and they are no. Yeah, it's.
I had dinner with a bunch of them, so yeah.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. Well, it's. My point is that if they were trying to reconnect with the rest of the con scene, this ain't exactly doing it, because, it's. The harassment issues that used to permeate the older convention set are frankly not being accepted with the newer generation of cons. And I think WisCon is associated with the older generation con, but they've also been doing. They've had their issues, and they're trying to do a better job, but they're also kind of a unique beast when it comes to this, as they are literally marketed as a feminist science fiction convention specifically. So they're not your average science fiction con, even though they still target the same age demographic. It's just weird. It is just weird. But y'all want to find out about something weirder?
Oh boy.
So, Rocky Mountain FurCon is a convention. It's a furry convention that's been held. It's been held for a little while in Denver, Colorado. Hence the name Rocky Mountain and the FurCon. It's a furry con in Denver. Who would have thought? What a hard name to come up with. I don't know. I have more respect for puns. But that's just me.
Rocky Mountain High Fur Con.
Well, anyways. Last week, Rocky Mountain Fur Con officially canceled their 2017 event that was scheduled for this August. And it is the weirdest story I have seen in a long time. Nothing to do with the fact that it's a furry con, because furry cons are pretty much just like every other con, just more fursuits. Because, you know, that's the target demographic. So it would be surprising if it wasn't. But, you don't really expect, when you're talking about a con cancellation, that you're going to be going through the Sovereign Citizen movement, a sex offender on the staff, and Nazis. Just literal Nazis.
Yep.
Hooray! What? If you were unaware of Nazi furries, they've been a thing for a while.
Yep.
They're just getting more annoying. So strap in, this is gonna be a ride. So problems in Rocky Mountain FurCon, they've never had a smooth ride. The original convention chair, Kendall Ray Emery, stepped down in 2008 after it became publicly known that he was a registered sex offender. We don't know a lot of details about his offense. We know that he was convicted of sexual contact with a minor way back in 93, and we don't have any evidence that he's reoffended or anything like that. Like, I don't want to really go into that, because when you go back that far into the sex offender registry, there are things that can happen multiple ways. And without any details of his case, I don't want to make a statement. But most cons think it's probably a bad idea PR-wise to have a registered sex offender as the public face of your event. So you step down. He stepped down, and he would later sign over ownership to another guy named Zachary Brooks, who goes by the name Soren, and in 2011. So he was still technically owner of the convention after he stepped down as chair, but he signed over everything in 2011. Now, here's some interesting stuff about Rocky Mountain FurCon. In 2011, their parent organization, the Mid-America Anthropomorphic and Art Corporation, which I'm going to refer to as MAC throughout this because that's a mouthful, it's a huge name. MAC and Rocky Mountain FurCon lost their nonprofit status in 2011. Now, they lost their nonprofit and tax-exempt status. Although the event up until this year even, still advertised that they were a 501c3. They were still, well, 503c, I think is how they typed it, because they can't even lie well. So they've been advertising and telling people that they're a nonprofit organization, even though they're not, for the past 6 years. So now the furry news website Flera alleged that the organizers haven't paid their taxes since this happened, but when the Denver Post spoke to Brooks, that while they did lose their nonprofit status in 2011, the organization has been properly filing taxes. Whether or not this is true, I don't know. I don't have access to their tax records, but there are reasons I sometimes doubt how well they're doing their legal paperwork that we're going to get to in a minute. All this is like a small part, though, because then it has nothing to do with probably, well, it might have something to do with why it was canceled, but we're not really sure, because that's definitely not the reason they're saying it was canceled, even though, you know, there have been allegations of, you know, not paying taxes. And that is a group called the Furry Raiders. For those of you outside the Colorado furry fandom, the Furry Raiders are a group founded by Foxler Nightfire, and, well, they're Nazis. They're just Nazis. And now, in fairness, if you ask the Furry Raiders if they're Nazis, they're going to say no.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, they wear armbands based around the design of the Nazi Party, replacing the swastika with a paw that comes directly from the Nazfurs, who populated Second Life, who were a bunch of Nazi furs who were on Second Life a long time ago.
I want to rewind. I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around the Nazi furry part.
Like, yeah, we're getting there.
How is this a sub? Okay,
we're getting there. So they're gonna say they're not Nazis, but they wear the armbands, and their fur affinity page used to list their birthday as Adolf Hitler's. And yes, they've literally posted modified Nazi flags with the swastika replaced with the paw repeatedly on message boards. And even though he claims now that Foxler is a combination of Fox and Miller, his last name, he used to tell people it was a combination of Fox and Hitler. But no, they're Nazis. I'm sorry. Don't tell me you're not a Nazi. And
some of these pictures are like wearing brown shirts or SS looking.
Yeah, it's a little more modeled after the Italian fascists with the armband. But the siding with Richard Spencer when Richard Spencer got punched. You know, it's like they're Nazis, and they don't get they've also like had some stuff where they over reserved a room block at the hotel so other people couldn't actually get rooms for conventions. And, like, effectively, like, just general jerks, this particular group. And
Colorado fur Nazis. I hate those guys.
So, needless to say, and since they were attending Rocky Mountain Fur Con, a lot of other people aren't super fond of them. And they've been actually banned from some other events, or at least wearing their stuff. And so a random furry name who goes by the name Dio made a joke on Twitter about punching Nazis. There are important notes to understand here. Dio, one, is literally like in a different state than Rocky Mountain Fur Con. Two, had no intention of going. Three, made this post right after Richard Spencer got punched, and we were all making jokes about punching Nazis. So let's keep that in mind. Well, someone responded on Twitter, and I've had to screen capture these because these tweets no longer exist because the person who posted some of them has had their account suspended. After saying, "Can't wait to punch these Nazis," someone responded, "Watching you get shot by someone defending themselves from unprovoked assault would be far more entertaining." And then someone else, the third person in the conversation, said, "Sure hope you're not suggesting that someone would bring a gun to the convention, because I don't know about you, but most conventions ban guns. It's a, you know, they're guns."
Uh-huh.
And then this Olivia person, who was the first person to post about someone, just said, "Sure hope you're not planning on attacking innocent folks. I fully support legal concealed carry." And someone pointed out that the con banned firearms. But so if you're thinking in this conversation, hey, someone just suggested it'd be funny to watch someone get shot. By the way, if you punch some, if you shoot someone after they punch you, you're going to go to jail for murder. You won't go to jail if you punch them back necessarily, but if you shoot them, that's not how, like, you have to actually be fearful. Well, I guess there are so many social commentaries I can make here that aren't important. But if your thought of the person who's like, hey, people should bring guns to the con, is the person who caused the outrage, well, you'd be mistaken. So Dio was, like, a little bit worried about, like, people talking about bringing guns to the convention. And according to Dio, sent a message to Rocky Mountain FurCon about it. That's when some of the weirdness happened. And again, we're going to get to why I think there might be an issue with the taxes. That, again, it's conjecture, but I think there might be an issue with the taxes. You see, Dio, after sending the message, received a bizarre cease and desist letter in the mail. Was this written by a lawyer? No, it was written by... It was written by Kendall Emery, registered sex offender, no longer owns the con, but is apparently still high ranking on the staff, who identifying himself as the chief executive contract law officer for Midwest Anthropomorphic Arts Corporation and its subsidiary Rocky Mountain FurCon, sent out a bizarre list of things that, for the most part, this is a,
Is that a fingerprint and blood?
We're going to get to that. Most of it is gibberish that is legally unenforceable, but it's so are most cease and desist letters, so...
We don't have much time. I'm just trying to...
Right. I'm watching the time. All right, so, like, it was a bunch of stuff, but it ended with, if there are any objections to the finding of these facts in law or this order, please respond within 10 days. Otherwise, your silent acquiescence is acceptable per the law... of qui tacit consentiere videtur, and further actions in violation of this order shall also be prosecuted to the fullest extent of these many laws. First off, that's not how cease and desist letters work. If you ignore a cease and desist letter, guess what happens? Nothing. You're not admitting anything. To claim that you have the power as a civilian to force someone to respond to you or else you agree when you have no formal contract with them is bullshit. That is bullshit. But he probably just lifted that from somewhere trying to sound official because he importantly signed in red and then put a seal of a red thumbprint. I don't know if it was probably ink in this case, but this is a key thing that indicates it's a member of the sovereign citizen movement. Sovereign citizens believe lots of things, but mostly that the government's authority doesn't apply to them if they say so. They believe you can get a lot of things done with the magic. If you understand and learn the law, it's like magic and people have to just let you do things, which is not true. But they also believe, some believe that there is the corporate self and the real self, and that if you sign in blue or black, you're signing for the secret corporation that's been set up in your name, that secretly they've been government's making money off of you. But if you sign in red as representative of blood of the people, that is the real signature of a person, and they also believe the thumbprint in blood or red ink is the one true form of identification. These are not well people. Anyways, well, I shouldn't say that. But they are at least people who have been indoctrinated in a bizarre way, who really have no fundamental understanding about how law works. And it's not a good sign. But these are also people because they often don't recognize the authority of state or federal governments. Leads me to believe that when they say they've been doing their taxes properly, perhaps Brooks does believe that, but also who knows what Emery has told him his required duties are. If he's telling him that, if he's in theory as a non-lawyer advising the organization on law.
With his magic thumbprint.
Now, if you want to know why how this leads to an event cancellation, apparently, and this is according to Rocky Mountain FurCon, that because of the threat of, again, from a person who joked about punching Nazis at a place they were never going to, that threat is caused required them to, if to hold the con, hire additional security, which would have bankrupted the con. Now, organizers of Rocky Mountain Fur Con are claiming that Dio contacted the hotel directly and the hotel made a mandate. Dio claims that she never contacted the hotel and that she only contacted them and has no idea what happened after that. Either way, this is what Rocky Mountain Fur Con is blaming their cancellation on.
I love
Holy
when Nazis,
crap.
I love when Nazis feel threatened because it's like, how can you threaten my freedom of speech? It's like, you want to exterminate people. What?
Fascists are the first people to complain about freedom of speech when they don't get it. But they don't want yours. Because again, they're fascists. You see, the joke was subtle in the mentioning fascists. Fascists. So holy crap. The good news is a new group of people are getting together to start a furry con in Denver, which will hopefully not be run by people who sympathize with Nazis. Also, there are reasons to believe that members of the Rocky Mountain Fur Con staff are in some way involved. Some of them are involved with the furry raiders directly. I don't have confirmation. There's just sort of things that kind of indicate that. So maybe Denver will be lucky enough to get a new furry con that doesn't involve Nazis.
Yeah.
We can hope.
Yeah.
We can only hope.
We can do more than hope. We can dream.
We got a full mailbag.
We should dream our way into the mailbag.
We can read mail.
Who wants to take Keith's email?
Sure. Hit me. Hi, nerd and Ty, Vomit Hat, Steve Challenge Bay. I'd like to quickly apologize.
Okay, so I want to point what he said. There's a deleted paragraph in his email where he guesses the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
Oh, okay.
And so I was just denoting that there's missing text in the letter.
There's no way for me to know. Okay, anyway.
I'd like to quickly apologize
for what I assume was my horrendous spelling and lazy typing causing all the dead air in the last podcast. My hat's off to you for making it through it all. I'll try and do better this time. Last time I mentioned the new Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie had recently become my new favorite animated movie. And while I doubt any of you guys are interested in Yu-Gi-Oh! In the slightest...
That's right, Yu-Gi-Boy.
Sorry, but that is correct. There was an interesting aspect to it that I've been seeing more and more in anime these days... And references to a bridging culture, it seems like the movie constantly kept referencing jokes that were made popular not by the source material, but by Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged, the web series, which many have speculated is the reason the fandom is still alive at all, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Isn't the only one. A lot of official Dragon Ball Z products have reached out to but most interestingly... the most interesting reference happened in the season clip show of the episode of Avatar Korra. In that episode, the entire segment of the episode simply is a abridged episode using the exact same animation, repurposing voice acting and writing techniques, which is interesting considering that there has not been a successful abridged Avatar series to date. So, with that in mind, I was wondering what your thoughts are on fan projects, fan culture, official media coming together like this, and your thoughts on anime abridged series. It also asks, how does one Spock in the free world, exactly? Do it, okay?
He wants to know how. You do it logically.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Anyway, I do want to say this. The anime abridging culture, this is something I've dived a little bit into, is a lot of people will throw it back to Little Kuribo's Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged, and I would argue that it's much older than that. Goofy fan dubs existed well throughout the late 90s. It was just harder to distribute them. But you look at projects like Robotech 3, not necessarily the Sentinels, and Evangelion Redeath. That's really all you need to look at to know that this has been something going on for a long time. these fan dubs walk an interesting line. It's hard for them to stay legal. Team Four Star keeps getting taken down. If they can work with the official sources, it's great. The thing that sucks is that the Japanese end of things hate them. Enough said.
Yeah. Any further thoughts on that, Ken?
No.
All right, then why don't I read The Mad Chemist, since it would be weird if you welcomed yourself.
Yeah.
The Mad Chemist writes, "Welcome, Gen. Hi, nerds that wear ties. I have not written in lately and thought I would change that and say, welcome, Gen. It's great to hear someone else to keep Nick and Trey on their toes." All of these are spelled wrong. Trey's spelled wrong.
Gen's spelled correctly.
Gen's spelled correctly. It's time for another rage-inducing thought questions. Another rage-inducing thought questions. Okay. I shouldn't make fun of people. What things do you see in the vendor room that you see vendors do that makes you most angry? This question is for all three of you. We'll start with that. I'm going to say those mystery boxes.
Sell bootlegs.
Yeah, selling bootlegs.
Selling bootlegs. I know that upsets
ticks
all
me
of
off
us.
Fierce.
Well, you know what those mystery boxes are also often full of?
Bootlegs.
Ah. Hey-o. Yeah. Anything else, Mixman?
I don't know. There's a lot of artist things that upset me, but...
Markups of recent Japanese things that have the yen price on the side of it that I can read how much it cost them in the first place.
Yeah, vendors who put things out into the walking aisles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Vendors who pretty much put anything else in anyone else's space.
Yep.
Super tall things, yes, we know. All right. So moving on to the next part is also Power Ranger movie opinions, I assume, since it says Power Rangers movie options, and I think that the options are that there is a movie.
Did anyone else on the panel see it?
I did not.
All right, since I'm the only
one... I want to. I've been busy.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I went in hoping for a laugh because I didn't think it was going to be good, and honest to God, I loved it. I love the characters. I love their interactions. I still don't really like the aesthetic of the costumes of the Zords, but I love these Power Rangers so much, I can't wait to see them together in another movie. They were great characters. It was a very character-driven movie, and that's enough for me.
All right, so now I'm going to read the final question, and I want to point out that, as I know what the answer to this is, I want to point out we received this thing, like, days and days ago. The next part of the email is... Arkamize, spelled A-R-K-A-M-I-Z-E. Arkamize, how was the drive over back to Wisconsin? Why don't you come up here, Arkamize, so the microphone can pick you. Talk near the recorder. Right here.
It was fine.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
What time did you get to Janesville?
Was it 3?
3:30.
On Friday? And why did it take you that long?
Traffic.
You mean you got lost?
No.
Because you didn't have a data plan on your phone and didn't have GPS?
Maybe.
So not great?
It went all right.
What city did you end up in before you got to Janesville?
Janesville.
Was it in the right state?
I didn't get to Janesville.
But did you?
He did get to Janesville.
How many times did you leave Janesville and have to loop back into it?
Never.
Because you've never left, and none of this is real. I understand. Anyways, keep up the nerd and tying, Mad Chemist.
Awesome.
Dan, you've got the next.
The next piece of mail is actually from Firsters. It says, "Hey, Nerd and Ty, longtime contributor, first-time writer. The reboot of Mystery Science Theater 3000 is without any argument a success. It's not often you see a show with robot sidekicks maintain a successful reincarnation. Sorry, Kit." So my question to you, dear radio crew, is aside from the new Art and Servo, what other rebooted robots have made it through being brought back to life? There aren't many, but what are your favorites?
The Lost in Space robot in the Lost in Space movie. Voiced by the original guy from the original show, too, I want to point out.
Analyzer, the robot from Space Battleship Yamato and Yamato 2199. Yeah. So
everything is wrong with the Lost in Space movie except the robot. So let's be clear about that opinion.
The robot was pretty cool.
We don't have a lot of time, so let's get to the next letter.
One last letter. We got one from Langland.
Well, we got to do the Vomit at Steve challenge before we do. No, so do Langland before we do the paper one.
Yeah. So, hey, here we are again at No Brand Con. I'm just going to ask how you guys are doing this lovely Fortnite. Awesome.
Great.
We're doing good.
I wish I had something to ask, but I don't. Anyway, I hope you have a really cool tie for the podcast.
It's spinning right now. Langland's tie is spinning.
It is. It's very impressive.
He has a cool tie. It is. And if I don't, beat me up live on the podcast.
Well, he has a cool tie, and we're lazy, and he's way over there, so we're not going to beat him up.
That ain't going to happen. That's all
I got. I'm not standing up. All right, so we're gonna try to rush through the Hall of Awesome. We're not going to do the Vomit at Steve challenge this episode, but we are going to do what we promised to do, and that is, of course, go through the Hall of Awesome. The Vomit at Steve challenge is a part of the show where I read a name from a See, I do word replacement. Read a sentence from a book, and the challenge to you, our listeners, is to guess what book it is. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. And we do have a new member of the Hall of Awesome this episode, and that is Keith, who wrote into us, gets added because he correctly guessed that I was reading from Black House by Stephen King and some other guy whose name I don't remember because I don't have the book in front of me. But so, yes, he did correctly guess it. So Keith, you will be included in the Hall of Awesome. The other members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows: Arkhamai, Zero, Rinnan, Senti, Cheesy McDemu, Chris the Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Van Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Soros, Paper Godzilla, Cavsy, Minnesota Librarians, and Sean Orange. So, yes, Keith, your name will be added to that list. I'm going to say right now, if there's any specific way you want your name listed, you should also send another contact to us so I can do it, so I just won't be putting your name straight on there. If you just want your name on there, well, don't do anything. That's just what I'll do anyways. And so technically we have just a couple minutes left, and we've got a piece of paper in front of me.
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's in cursive.
It's in fucking cursive.
Oh, my gosh. Can you read it? I could try to decipher it.
Hey, nerds and Ty and live studio audience. Hope y'all all doing well. I've been a little busy lately, so I haven't had a chance to write in, my dearest Margaret. I know it was a full schedule tonight, and the cold is chilly, and it's ripping to my bones.
And the chilly is cold.
So I'll keep this simple, my dearest. What's your favorite new show? To something, anime, other TV, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I know what TV is in these cold North Carolina woods. To come out in 2017 so far. Catch you next time. Your dearest Arkhamize.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 returns.
MST3K to the return.
MST3K, duh.
Okay. You happy that I may have embellished a little bit there?
And because I live near him, I get to read the letter to Shameless Otaku. How's it going? Did you get a chance to see Your Name? It was pretty fantastic, and I highly recommend seeing it in theater. It's beautiful and wonderfully written. Talk to you later, Arkhamize.
Okay,
there you go, Shameless Otaku.
We have almost gone off the rails on the crazy train, but we made it through this marathon.
We've made it with 3 minutes to spare. If you would like to say something now.
Now.
It's been too late because I waited too long to finish that sentence. We should say who we were.
I'm Nick Izumi.
I'm Trey Dorn.
I'm Benjamin.
And remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Store, Stitcher, or anything that can accept an RSS feed to fill your life with podcasts. Or if you want to watch the video versions of episodes, which this one is not, you can go to youtube.com/Tregorn and just pretend this one's on there and watch the other episodes. You also can find us at nerdandtie.com. Donate to us at gofundme.com/nerdandtie. Tie and sound the alarm.
Keep on sparking in the free world.
Sound the alarm,
David the gnome.
I want to point out that end theme is, and we put it on the podcast multiple times. The end theme is from a rock opera called Harry Potter and I Must Scream, which is a mashup of Harry Potter and I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, written by Vomithead Steve, featuring music from a couple different people, including me. So yes, you can find that album for free on the internet. The version that we use is a version of the full song, the full song Cloudburst, done in the style of the reprise that I wrote for the album. There we go. Nerdandtie.com.